Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And we're talking to you on episode 252 for April 2026. And even though I'm not seeing any champagne flutes on the table, we are still in celebratory mode because we are realizing that we have been doing this for 20 years, which is something to celebrate about.
A podcast that goes for 20 years is much more than most podcasts, and we only do this because our listeners have demanded it, and they have responded very positively. You know, we've met you, we get emails from listeners, and
some of you have become our friends.
Yep, and as you,
some of you may still become our friends.
That's right. We are still in that mode. We travel around, and you might just get a. We just might meet you. Who knows? This has been a really interesting experience, and as you know, this podcast is completely free. It's completely free of advertising, no commercials.
That's why it's lasted so long.
Well, and one of the reasons I like that is because I don't like to be beholden to anybody. If we tell you something about a product, it's our opinion, and it stands alone and is not influenced by any other outside factors. So take that with a grain of salt. I'm stunned at how many podcasts are sponsored or have commercials during the podcast, whether they're done by the podcasters themselves or not. That's been a big, big change.
And I think since COVID, everybody who is any kind of a star or celebrity has to have a podcast or joins together with other stars and celebrities.
And of course, when we started this podcast in 2006, nobody knew what a podcast was. We would
including
talk to people,
me.
People of our generation just didn't get into doing podcasts. And it's interesting that we have friends who were our friends for a long time, but don't listen to the podcast. And then we have new friends who are our friends because they listen to the podcast and have somehow, and we have become their friends. So
every
this
month
has been an exciting adventure.
Every month I download way too many podcasts and listen to as many as I can, and they have enriched my life, and I hope that we are doing that for you.
Exactly, and our purpose is to give you something to do as you are traveling down the road. We specifically make this an audio-only podcast because we don't want you to be sneaking a peek at that TV screen as you're zipping down the road so that you can just listen and enjoy, and it'll make the miles go much faster. And that's what we do. So we appreciate having other people do the same thing for us, and we don't sneak a peek at the TV screen, do we?
No.
But I do watch some video.
Video.
And video on YouTube seems to be a very big topic
these days,
everybody. And I don't know.
That's where people make money.
Yeah. And I see people essentially videoing their podcast like we're doing here, just sitting and talking.
Then we'd have to comb our hair.
Ooh.
And people would see that it is gray or white.
And they would see the huge gash on my cheek.
The sunshine of lifeguarding in your youth has caught up with
you. I was a lifeguard?
You were a lifeguard, and that's what I was doing when I met you.
Oh, no. That has caught up with me?
We have made major donations to the dermatologist's boat recreational funds.
She's talking about the fact that I had to have Mohs surgery, which is a surgery that they cut out a chunk of your...
They remove skin cancer, and they try to do it as delicately as possible when it's on your face, but they are very careful to get every cell that is not behaving itself, and sometimes it takes a while for them to determine what that really is. And so one of the first times you did it, you were gone the entire day. But down here in Florida, people know what they're doing, and there are many old people with various kinds of skin cancer and lots of people to help us.
Yeah, we've been pretty pleased with the medical care down here in Florida. We have always done it up in Illinois, but this turned out to be not exactly an emergency, but something that needed care immediately so that it didn't spread. And I got it taken care of in a morning. I've had Mohs before, and it has taken 3 or 4 efforts to get the entire cancer out of the spot, but this time it only took one shot, which is a good news. Only one big chunk of skin that leaves your face. But I've found it's pretty painless, and I can highly recommend it if you need it.
It's important to keep an eye on your skin.
And, of course, we'll look at the scar later and say, whoa, what was that from?
No, you hardly even have a scar from the ones you've had before. They've done a good job.
So, this is not much about RVing, and we are, though, ready to talk about RVing, although we haven't done much RVing this month because we have been here in Florida enjoying the great weather and just kind of kicking back and doing medical things.
Including medical things for our RV.
Oh, yes.
It's so convenient to be in a campground that has a repair facility on site.
Yes, and we had the painting job done, which I think we mentioned last month, but we had the scrape from Alaska taken care of, and that cost $15,000 about. And
what scrape from Alaska?
That's right, you can't see it anymore at all. Yeah, they came back beautiful after 2 weeks in the shop, and then we had some other things done. Well, the money pit is sitting in the garage, and I think it just continues. We've had a few other minor repairs taken care of, but it always adds up in terms of bucks, but it's convenient to have it done here.
As with any vehicle, when your vehicle gets long in the tooth, you have to say to yourself, do I want to keep it and keep fixing stuff, or do I want to just go out and buy a new one? And we have definitely committed to the 2012 that we have, and now we're replacing it piece by piece.
Oh, no, we can't stay in campgrounds that require your rig to be less.
Oh. Don't tell it. We're more than 10 years old.
Well, we're more than 10 years old, so I guess it goes right along with that. We are about to transition back to Illinois, and we are going to take a little week-long trip
in
the RV back to Illinois, and we are now cleaning out our house and putting all the stuff back in the RV.
Which is a real problem, because when you have a house to fill up with stuff, you do. And now my worry is that I'm going to leave some things here that I wanted to put back in the motorhome. We're doing it in a leisurely way so that hopefully we will notice everything. And it's not like we're going to go to Alaska.
Yeah.
Things can be replaced, but I hate to have more than one of something if I don't really need to.
Yeah, we're not going to be back here in Florida for about 7 months. We don't plan to be back until sometime in October because we have a full summer full of activities planned, which includes mid-April. We're going to Tokyo, to Japan for about 6 weeks. And that will take up all the way through May. That sounds like an exciting trip.
When we're done with the Japan portion of the trip, we are cruising back to the United States, as we often do. And we are so excited that we're going to be meeting a listener who, coincidentally to us, in Australia, booked the same cruise. So for us, it'll be a cruise back home, and for him, it'll be a cruise to more adventures.
So Al and Sue, we're looking forward to seeing you.
It'll be so much fun to be with them again.
No, we wouldn't have seen you by the time you listen to this, but we are looking forward to that in mid-April. Once again, another very successful listener experience that we have enjoyed very much over the years, and that's been quite a few years since we've known Al.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what are we doing?
Well, we're kind of in a sentimental, historical mood because it's been 20 years, which has got us thinking, how did we get here? How did all this start? And for me, it started with a blue tent, which really is not an RV, but it was all that we could afford. When the weather is nice, it's really nice to sleep out under the stars, feel the breezes going through your hair as you're laying there in your sleeping bag. But days like that are few and far between. I have a very, very vivid memory of us taking both of our mothers in that tent to southern Indiana, and we all laid there in our sleeping bags
and
comfortably and constant on our air mattresses, because they probably were younger than we are now.
Yes.
But we were all sleeping on the ground, and in the morning we were all floating in the blue tent. So that's how it began. So as soon as we could scrape a little money together, we bought a conversion van, kind of a class B?
Well, for the time it was a Class B, it had a fiberglass top, and that was in 1976. So we have been RVing since 1976, which is over 50 years ago. And we just started the podcast just 20 years ago. So yeah. We were RVing long before that. From the van, we took that out west. We drove actually a lot of miles in it.
And it served as our second car because we couldn't afford to have another car. We always really appreciated how well designed it was in terms of the use of space. We cooked in there. We showered in there. We had a little TV in there. We tried to make it as homey as we could. And most of the time, we were still looking for good weather so we could live out of it because the quarters were a little bit close.
And from there, we bought a 25-foot travel trailer, which we towed behind a Bronco. And we towed that all the way to Alaska and back and had some very good times in that, too.
And then we started towing it to Colorado, and I totaled it. That's when we started getting more serious about studying all the factors that you should consider when you buy an RV of any sort, because there are things you can do wrong, as we did, that can make it a bad experience, which it was, and could even kill yourself, which we almost did. So we thought we would talk a little bit about things to think about as you enter the RVing field, no matter what level of kind of unit you are thinking about.
We want to share with you some of the sage comments and learning experiences that we have learned over the past 50 years of RVing, and certainly since the 20 years that we have been doing this podcast. We have learned a few things that maybe we should share in a routine way. And of course, this is going to become clickbait.
Why?
Because I'm going to put the 10 things that you should remember to do as an RVer.
Don't you hate those?
And then I'm going to have I'm going to take a picture of you pointing to some sort of caption that says that.
Okay, I might have to comb my hair.
Oh, I hate the clickbait. Anyway, and so many people use it. The worst things you can do on the road.
And because we quickly learned that the choice we had made then was not the best choice, we moved on to a fifth wheel. And it was a much more stable vehicle, but necessitated having a truck.
Yes.
And the truck.
Never had a truck, a pickup.
The truck became our second car. It was way too big to park for somebody like me.
Wasn't even a dually.
Hitching it up was always an adventure. I admired Ken once again as he threaded his way through forest campgrounds in the dark, parking that thing, and it served us well while we had it.
And this was in the days when the fifth wheels, you couldn't stand up in the bedroom.
Right.
In the portion over the bed. These days, they make that so tall that you can easily stand up in the bedroom. But the first fifth wheels were kind of not very tall, and when you got up in the bedroom, you could sit up, but you couldn't stand.
So we owned a fifth wheel when we first retired, for those of you who were listening to us all those many years ago, and took a wonderful trip to Mexico in a caravan with it, and we had ample opportunity at that point to observe our fellow campers, some of whom had motorhomes, and it seemed that even though they were much more expensive than our setup, it was a quality of life factor that was definitely a move up. And at that point, we started interviewing some of the motorhome owners and trying to learn from them what we needed to know to make a good choice when we could finally scrape together the money to buy one for ourselves.
Right. And so that happened in 2007, which was just after the motorhome was, or after the podcast was started. We bought a 2004 Newmar Dutch Star, which we enjoyed very much. It was, of course, secondhand, and we have put quite a few miles on that. And then in 2014, we bought a 2012 Dutch Star, which is our current vehicle.
And will probably remain so if we can keep putting the failing parts back together.
And we have come to really appreciate the Dutch Star and the floor plan and the diesel pusher as the ultimate in terms of RVing. And it is very livable.
Even as we look ahead to the drive home, when the cost of diesel, which generally is higher than the cost of gas, is going to be astronomical, we still feel confident that we have made the right decision for ourselves. People who don't like motorhomes think they are very big, and they are. For us, that's what makes it comfortable living in it, but we always are towing a car, so we can be as quick and nimble as we want to be once we have parked it somewhere. And that's a combo that I really like.
And that is a combo which is essential, I think, if you're going to do long-term RVing, because driving a truck around gets to be a real drag. Not only is it expensive, but it's also your only vehicle, and if something happens to it, you're stuck once again. But with us, we have two engines and we have two vehicles, so that if something happens along the road, we can always drive off and we can use it as a second vehicle when we are in a campground.
So, another vivid memory that I have, when we still had a fifth wheel, when we were in Mexico, as you might imagine, the roads were often not that great, and we would always have a surprise at the end of the day when we would park and go back to the fifth wheel trailer and see what had been damaged or flew around or fell on the floor because you couldn't keep an eye on anything. We often had picnic lunches. We had to pack them ahead of time, put them in the truck because we couldn't do it while we were driving, as I do now. And I remember we lost our light fixture chandelier fan thing, shards of glass all over the place. Occasionally, cabinets would fly open. We learned a lot about how to pack things firmly from that first adventure.
And fifth wheels don't have suspension. In the early days, our fifth wheels didn't have any sort of shocks, and so that they would just bounce whenever you went over bumps in the road, and it would just continue to bounce. Whereas the motorhome has very excellent
and easy to walk around in while you are driving.
Exactly. So we have enjoyed quite a lot of vehicles, and so that gives us perspective to give you some ideas about if you're getting started or if you're thinking about RVing as a lifestyle, and if you're thinking about retirement in an RV, you might want to consider the things that we are going to mention in a minute.
We always are happy to give you advice, whether you want it or not.
That's why you listen to the podcast.
Please ask.
Yeah, and of course, we appreciate your comments. So we will give you some ideas of things that we think are important, and we're going to start with number one, which is pretty obvious.
For every camping experience.
Right, motorhome or not. And that is, number one, is follow the good weather.
Now, for us, that's usually the 70s, but there's some of you crazy people out there that we know like to go skiing out of your RV, and for you, good weather might be a good snowfall. But whatever that is, you need to pay attention to it, and you need to pay attention to how it is where you are going and how it is along the way. And these days, with all the connectivity that we have, that's so much easier to do than it used to be.
Yes, and that means follow the seasons, too. You know, one of the things you don't want to have to do is to be stuck inside your RV for extended periods of time. So we like to say we follow the 70s. We can leave the windows open. We don't need heat. We don't need air conditioning. And we can get out and do things on a daily basis. Here in Florida in the summertime, it is just too
ungodly.
Hot. It is just too hot to go out and hike and do the things that are fun to do as RVers. And likewise, in Chicago, in the wintertime, we are just not going to go out. We could probably drive to these places, but what are you going to do when you get there? So go to see the cherry blossoms in Washington, D.C. Come to Florida in this, and this past month has been beautiful.
Yes, it has.
I mean, we have had mid-70s and 50-something or other at night every night for the last month, for the last couple of months. So that's why we come down here.
And I guess you even need to pay attention to what the weather was like before you got to that place, because here in Florida, we are currently experiencing a drought, which to us is a wonderful thing because it never rains and it's sunny every day. But people are starting to worry about forest fires, and this is something that we also experienced and talked to you about when we went to Alaska. The climate is changing, whether people want it to or not, and areas that used to be reliably comfortable at a certain time of year may no longer be, or may be about to have some calamitous weather event that you need to pay attention to.
And remember that following this philosophy, we have been through all of Mexico. We've been to Cancun, we've driven to Cancun, we've driven to Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan, the Yucatan. We've driven all over that area, Copper Canyon. We have been all over the Canadian provinces. We've been
to every single one except the very farther North Arctic ones.
Right.
And we're going to work on one of those this summer, so stay tuned.
We've been to Alaska and, of course, all 50 states, but we've RV'd in 49 of those. So following this philosophy is indeed feasible if you just kind of plan ahead.
Pay attention.
Number two, An RV is not just a home on wheels. It has many systems that are not in sticks and bricks houses. Now, what RVs will seem like is that they seem like just
your
a
house.
House, like a house on wheels.
And we've tried very hard to make our motorhome feel like our house. But nevertheless, when I am cooking dinner and I blow up the pedestal because I have too many appliances plugged in, I realize that it's not.
And that's one of the minor problems. You have to understand that an RV is actually much more complex than your house. In order to have water coming out of the tap on a full-time basis, yes, you can hook up to a spigot outside, but you probably need a tank. And that tank has to be powered or has to be emptied from a pump. And so you have to have a water pump. So you actually have two water systems in your RV. It has to have a hot water heater, which is running off of probably dual sources of heat.
Propane or electricity.
Which it causes more problem. And you need to service that much more than the hot water heater at home. Our hot water heater is electric here in Florida, and you don't have to touch it.
It just goes.
It just goes. And it'll go for 10 years until it stops. Whereas the propane one or the electric one in your motorhome will not need servicing. The other thing, of course, is the electric system. It's so nice. You just click the switch and the lights come on.
But you don't know why, because some of them are coming through the pedestal from what I call normal electricity, and some of them are coming from the battery.
And some of them run off of an inverter, which is something you don't have in your house. You don't have a 12-volt system. So that essentially there are two electric systems in your RV, a 12-volt one and a 120. The details here.
There's a lot to know.
The bottom line here is that you need to take some extra time to understand how these systems work. You need to maintain your batteries. You need to maintain all of the running gear because in many cases, there are air conditioners. You know, what do you do with them? It's not just the fact that things are rattling around as you go down the road, which causes enough problems, but also you have the fact that there are dual systems for most of the basics. At home, we flush the toilet. What do you have to do?
Use the toilet paper. That's about it.
That's about it, right. In an RV, what do you have to do? You're going to have to go out and dump it. You're going to have to understand how the system works, and you don't want to get clogged up when you have to put chemicals in it and all that stuff. Yes, it works like your house. When you're inside, and if your wife doesn't really pay attention to anything, it works just like it does at home.
It's a wonderful thing.
But somebody has to go behind the scenes and understand how these things work if you're going to continue to use it on a regular basis. It's just a essential. And so many people, they say, batteries? What do I need a battery for?
Or I'm plugging in.
I have a water pump. When I've never used the water pump. Well,
now I suddenly don't have hot water. How did that happen?
All sorts of things. I read the forums regularly, and people are just so naive about buying any type of RV because they don't think about the total system and how it works.
And that to me is kind of a slippery slope because these days it is so easy to get so much information from the internet, watch videos on YouTube, and you never really know unless you've been watching them for a while. Do these people that you're watching know what they're talking about? Because we have read many forums where people give you advice and we just say, oh my God, that's not true. And that goes double for when you are buying that RV and you are in a store talking to a salesman. We've been shocked how many salespeople in the RV industry have never spent a night in their RV. And when you sit there and listen to them talk about it, it's pretty apparent to us. But if you're a newbie, how would you know?
Well, the next number three is RV fridges and how to use them properly. And that's another interesting topic. A fridge is so basic to the lifestyle of everybody that you have to have someplace to put cold stuff. And that RV fridges come in a wide variety of different kinds, and they work differently than a fridge at home. If you have an RV fridge, it probably works with propane and electric, and it uses both 12-volt and 120.
So you have three choices to run your fridge.
Not really. You have
kind of.
Two.
Kind of.
because in order to run it on electric, you have to have 110. But in order to run the thermostat in the fridge, you need 12 volts. So you have to have a good battery. And if you're going to plug it in and run it off the inverter, it has to provide heat from the elements from the battery and or from propane. So it uses heat. I've talked about this before, and I don't want to rant. But it uses heat to make coal.
And here I go with another one of my memories of sitting in a fifth wheel. It was probably large enough for a family with a dozen children. And the man that was thinking about buying it said to the salesman, "Can I run it with the battery overnight?" And the guy said, "Oh, sure, no problem." And we looked at it. And
he said 3 or 4 days you could run it.
And he had what, one?
One regular car battery, size battery. And, of course, the other choice that you have these days is not having an RV fridge, but having a
residential.
And a residential requires an inverter if you're going to run it off of battery. And a single battery will run it probably on the order of 8 hours, maybe, depending on how many times you open the door. But the bottom line here is that pay attention to these things, because this makes a big difference in how you live. And we have some friends right now that have a residential fridge, and they have a single battery, and you know that they are just not going to have a good experience with that. Number four.
Oh, yes. Women love to decorate.
Ooh.
And I have really been enjoying our first winter in our new house here in Florida, thinking about how I want to personalize it and make it my own. This is a little bit harder to do in an RV because a lot of them come kind of pre-decorated for you, but you still want to put around some tchotchkes, your pictures of your dog or statuettes or your bowling trophy or whatever it is that means a lot to you. And you put this stuff all around on every horizontal surface you can find, and then you hit the road, and once again, all this stuff goes a-flying.
And not only your tchotchkes, but your
dishes.
Your appliances. I mean, we have to be very careful about even the coffee maker. We have to put the glass thing for the coffee maker
in the sink.
In the sink or someplace. You have to make sure that everything is put away.
And it is possible to put all this stuff away, but if you move regularly, it gets to be a chore, and you will find that the tchotchkes are not worth all the time you're spending on putting them in safe spots and then putting them out again. So I would say resist the urge to do a lot of personalizing and decorating, unless you plan to stay in one place for months at a time, then it would make more sense.
Yeah, and we like to travel. I mean, overall, we travel.
We're trying to see the world.
Yes. With these tchotchkes, you definitely need to put them away, as you say, but you need to have a place for them. You can't just throw them in a drawer, or they need to have some sort of system. Or you can use
museum glue or something.
But with the motorhome, we can hear when something goes bad in the back.
And I run back there and see if it's
something. But as
she
mentioned, sometimes people come back, and we've come back in the fifth wheel, and
shocked.
We open the door, and whoa, things have just gone astray.
And we lost a set of dishes even with the motorhome.
And they were Corel.
Because we now learned to put a little rubber band around the knobs on the doors to hold them shut. Live and learn.
Okay, number five. Jeez, we're really moving along here. Number five, navigation, trip planning resources specific to RVing, not just general mapping programs.
We've met people who navigate with their phones when they're at home, which works pretty well in a car, but not so well when you are towing a large vehicle that can't just go everywhere that your car can go. And when you go to mountainous places where the signal for your phone is suddenly blocked, or you're in a big city and the caverns of the skyscrapers, you suddenly have no navigational assistance at all, and it's kind of a shock to the system.
Right. So, of course, this is kind of a new problem because I remember for my retirement, I was given a handheld GPS, which was very novel at the time, black and white screen, and you had to download maps for
the area
very
you
small
were going.
Areas. Chicago was like divided into six different places that you could download.
The good old days.
And now, of course, we have The new GPSs are really nice because they have exit so that it tells you to exit right but stay in the left lane because you're going to make a left turn at the light. And the amount of detail that is available in the GPSs is really very impressive.
And in early days, we also had a CB radio.
Oh, that's right.
Because one of the things you always wonder when you hit a traffic jam is, what happened? How long am I going to be sitting here? Is there somewhere else I should be going rather than staying on this road?
Yeah.
And at that point, the truckers kept us as well-informed as anybody. But these days, a lot of the navigational tools are starting to give out hints for alternatives.
Because you use Waze?
I look at Waze, and Google Maps also does that occasionally. So it offers you alternatives. But even so, I always have a paper map on my lap because sometimes these machines let you down.
Ooh. As she says, we each have a GPS that's running. Mine has a decent screen. Mine is just kind of a backup. We used to have two different brands, but you can't buy anything but Garmin, basically, for RVs these days. And you want one that will tell you about heights, won't let you go down roads that are too skinny, that are gravel, or you can set it for the kinds of roads that you find accessible. And you can say, I don't want to go down toll roads, and all sorts of adjustments that you can make, but you definitely don't want to go under the bridges that are too low. And there are these bridge cams that people have that you see RVers, and they just rip off their air conditioner or whatever as they're going underneath this bridge, and you just say, where is your GPS? Why didn't you use it? So that's important, and not just a car one. Number six, don't try to do too much in too short of a time.
Especially those of you who have worked, and only had 2 weeks of vacation a year, when you're finally retired and you want to see the whole United States, you don't need to do it all in one season, as tempting as that is. And you waste a lot of gas and you waste a lot of time driving if that's your approach. So take a long time. Always leave a day or two where you wanted to smell the roses, or spend some time in that repair facility because something broke. If you've got yourself booked up too tightly, it makes you nervous, it makes you rush, and when you rush, you start to make mistakes. You leave your aerial up, you leave your wife standing in the campsite and drive off without her, etc., etc.
We did that once.
So you need to have kind of a mental checklist, or people write a list where they check all this stuff before they come and go so that they don't make those kind of painful mistakes. We left our legs down once, too,
yeah,
and they were
yeah.
dragging on the ground.
Yeah.
It happens to everybody. So it's less likely to happen if you're not in a hurry.
I now watch fairly critically the people who are going, not critically, but I watch regularly the forums about people planning trips to Alaska. And you just cannot do Alaska in 2 or 3 weeks. You cannot drive that round trip and have a decent time. I just don't see how
and
you
see
can do
anything.
It.
All you see is the road.
Right. And I just don't see that as viable. I mean, we took 10 days to get to the beginning of our Alaska adventure last year.
So
So
save those things when you're old and gray like us and you have more time to do them right.
And people say, well, okay, then I'm going to fly to Anchorage and I'm going to rent an RV and in 2 weeks I'm going to see Alaska. Well, once
still
again,
not possible.
Just not feasible at all. It's really tempting, but I just don't think you get the quality experience out of it.
And the other thing that happens once you start traveling like this is that you meet other people who tell you about things you never heard of that sound really cool, that you say, oh, I want to see that and do that too. And if you've got yourself booked up too tight, you don't have time to take advantage of serendipitous kind of things. I got a lot of my best tips before I had an in-house washer and dryer, because when you're sitting there in the laundromat watching the clothes spin around, that's
yes.
a good time to chat and exchange notes and find out what other people have been doing.
Well, and of course, one of the other options that is easy, and that is to just take a caravan and go along with them. That's where you provide your own transportation and living quarters, and they plan everything else. And they will give it an appropriate amount of time for each of the destinations that you're going to. And there are caravans these days that go to
lots of places.
Lots and lots of places. The other is a rally, and a rally is different from a caravan because you go to one place and park, and then you do something some activity like the Albuquerque Balloon Festival or Oshkosh.
Or Rose Bowl Parade.
Or Rose Bowl
or
Parade.
Or Mardi Gras.
So you'd see all of the sites that are associated with that particular event. And those are well planned, and they will get you to see the things that are there to see.
That
you don't have
to do
a lot of research with that then.
Right.
Or worry about missing stuff. Okay, number seven.
Good maintenance habits. Boy, you are a Boy Scout. You are always prepared.
Never enough.
About to leave for our drive home, and you've been working for more than a week, checking,
yep,
lubricating, cleaning, fixing.
Making sure the slides work and they're lubricated and the roof is okay. And because this is the place to do it, because I have all my, well, I have a set of tools here similar to the ones I have at home now. So I've been busy buying all sorts of gizmos and gadgets. Oh, Amazon has been coming to our house.
You're on a first-name basis with the Amazon driver, that's for sure.
But making sure that your rig is ready to go before you leave is a good one. And checking the tires, it just starts with that. And, you know, having your tires that are not over capacity, and that's another important factor. I don't know if we have that one down here.
No, but I was going to talk about it under advantages and disadvantages of different kinds of rigs.
Okay, well, making sure that your rig is properly balanced and properly loaded is a key factor. And, of course, one of the reasons we think that we had the accident...
we were in the middle of Missouri on I-70 on the 4th of July.
And
the traffic stacked up behind
and
us.
And we closed it down. And I think the reason was is because we did not have the right balance in the
trailer.
You know, again,
in your home, you buy clothes, you hang them in the closet. And then you buy more clothes and you hang them in the closet. Or you might throw them on the floor, depending on how you are.
Yeah.
But you never worry about the weight of all those clothes, the weight of the water that's in your tank, et cetera, et cetera. And they have to be balanced.
And it has to be balanced from forward to back, too.
Inside to
side. So there has to be 30% of your weight should be on your trailer hitch, for instance. And so travel trailers are very tricky to load, and you have to stay within the capacity of that was manufactured for.
And again, these salesmen sometimes say, oh, yes, your blah, blah, blah truck can pull this trailer no problem, because it can do this many pounds, but that means that it can pull an empty trailer. And as soon as you start putting stuff in it, you're in deep doo-doo.
And as we found with our fifth wheel, that the truck that we had for the previous fifth wheel was not big enough to haul the new trailer. And we had to buy a diesel pickup then, because it just wouldn't take it above 65. And they should have told us that.
Well, now we know.
Yeah. Number eight.
Advantages and disadvantages of each type of rig that we have owned. We've kind of touched on a lot of this as we've talked. We obviously have...
Working backwards, we love the motorhome.
Yes, but it's big. I can't drive it, which worries me greatly, and every time Ken coughs, I cross myself and hope that he feels better soon. Smaller rigs are much more nimble, much easier to handle, but they get uncomfortable, especially when the weather is not good and you can't spend some time outside.
Gassers are notorious for being white-knuckle drivers, and I find the diesel pusher to be quiet, and because I'm sitting up high, people don't understand the advantage of sitting up high and looking down the road where you can see all of the traffic situations happening live, whereas most of the time in a car or a pickup or a smaller vehicle, you're down low and you can't see above the other cars.
Or when you're behind somebody else's motorhome, you can't see anything.
And we have this big IMAX screen in front of us, this huge windshield, which just lets you see everything that's going on down the road. And that is a super big plus to me with a Class A.
And
I don't have the hood in front of me either. Which
and
is
when you're in a pretty place like Alaska, you can take pictures while you're moving.
Uh-huh. All of those are good. So with a fifth wheel, you lose that advantage because your truck is the same height as all the cars and the other vehicles. But you do have the advantage of having a much more stable system because the fifth wheel, because the hitch is over the back axle, you're just automatically more stable and it's less sensitive to loading issues.
Or wind.
That's another one. That's another thing that we just don't have trouble with. unless it's super windy. We just don't have trouble with wind. You know, that leads to white knuckle driving, and that leads to bad experiences. And as you go down into the travel trailers, which are the travel trailers have about 80% of the RV, and because people either they're not loaded right, or they're not being towed by a big enough vehicle, or they're overweight, you have to look at the capacity of a travel trailer to see how much you can put in it. If you can put in 1,200 pounds, that's not very much. If your car won't tow it, then that's another problem. When you put the passengers, the kids, a bunch of food and everything,
water,
everything in that vehicle, oof.
And it's so tempting to buy because it's by far the most affordable choice.
By far.
Per square foot, the Class Bs are the most expensive RV you can buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of stunning because they're so little.
And just as a point of construction, if you see the corrugated metal siding, that means that it has a wooden frame. If you see fiberglass, it probably has a metal frame. And which would you rather have for longevity? Well, just for security.
Stability.
Well, I would rather have a nice aluminum frame.
Yeah.
So the cheapest ones you can buy are these travel trailers that have corrugated sides.
So if I was going to buy an RV and take it to the lake and spend the summer sitting in it going fishing,
right,
a trailer would probably be okay. It would probably make the trip here and back. But if you're going to do a lot more than that, it's not a safe or reliable choice. Sorry.
No, there are just too many issues that that are not evident from looking at it that will pop up as you go along, unless you're just a very methodical and careful driver, and it's just a big problem.
We learned the hard way.
Okay.
So don't you go through what I went through.
Yeah, we've had these problems, so we're trying to pass that along to you. Number 9.
Long-term RV travel requires a home-like living style. I do miss those conversations in the laundromat, but I don't miss all the time I wasted in the laundromat because it's so nice to be able to throw in a load of wash while I'm cooking, put it back in the dryer while we're watching TV. It's just a much more comfortable way to live.
Yes.
Having all of our appliances.
And we understand that all 40-foot RVs have the same amount of floor space. You have about 400 square feet, give or take, and that if you have two bathrooms, you're going to give up something else.
How much time do you spend in the bathroom?
Yes. People are really adamant about having fireplaces, and that takes up a fair amount of space. And a fireplace, of course, is not really a fireplace. But there are all sorts of factors to consider that will make it seem more like home. And having Starlink these days makes it a lot more like home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's an essential add-on for almost any RVer these days. So we like to have a home-like experience. And this is not a camping experience.
No.
Because we don't have that many campfires because
Can't anymore. There are fires everywhere.
Right. And so sitting around a campfire is not something that is done when you're doing kind of a scenic trip. It's just you don't have time to do it, or it's not allowed.
That's for the guy in the trailer who is going fishing,
right,
and not
right.
moving around.
And
he
so,
can
you know,
have a campfire.
Camping is not camping. And for us, camping is taking our lifestyle and moving it mobile. And I think that's the way a lot of people think they want to do it, but they don't really implement it enough to make it happen. And number 10, it's blank. Because we're going to let our listeners
tell us
what should number 10 be. What have you learned that should be on this list? Maybe something that we have touched on at all.
Maybe.
But we would like to hear from you, and we would like to have some...
What do you think is important in choosing an RV? What factors are critical for you?
Well, just what have you learned in your RV experience? But if you've been with us for 20 years, maybe you have some experiences that we haven't had. You know, we have friends that have Bs. We have friends that have small As. We have
fifth wheels,
everything. So we certainly respect everybody who has all of these different vehicles, and they've made it work for them. But what we've said prior to this is just what we feel. So some other topics, things that we should be talking about. How about let's mention the all-time favorite products on Amazon.
They pop up in my Facebook feed every so often.
Yeah, but this isn't a curated list like this one is.
No, no, this does. This does. And they have different categories of things that might be useful for an RVer. When I clicked on it, there, what comes up is paper books, which was kind of a surprise to see. But as I looked at them, they were all useful things that you would like to know before you plan a trip and as you're going down the road, books, atlases, guides, that sort of thing. But they also have links to stuff that would improve your lifestyle in your RV, your health and safety. We have talked about things like first aid kits and bringing enough medication for whatever it is you need.
Ooh. Number 10.
Maintenance and repair, gifts and games. A lot of people like to play games at the end of the day. Food and cooking. Some people make amazingly gourmet meals. I read about them sometimes.
And we see them on FaceTime.
Yes. So this is a link to ideas for things to have to enable you to do those things better.
And, of course, if you go to this month's RVNavigator.com webpage for this episode, you'll find a link to and readers' all-time favorite products at Amazon. It's a curated list.
So from RVTravel.com.
From RVTravel.com, one of our favorite websites. And, of course, while you're there, you always want to look at this month's calendar because every month I put up a great picture. Oh, this month's is fabulous.
Ooh, what is it?
Well, it's the dolphins.
That's right.
It's a fabulous picture for this past month,
past
for March.
Yeah.
For April.
I haven't downloaded it yet.
I haven't either.
Well, I'll be surprised.
Even though it's done.
You've made it. I know you have.
Yes, I have. Okay, so you will want to go and look at the calendar because we do a very nice calendar, monthly calendar, for each month that you can use as a wallpaper and your computer. An interesting book that you might want to take a look at, 50 States, 50 Campgrounds, Where to Go, When to Go, What to See, and What to Do, 5,000 Ideas.
Ooh.
This comprehensive sequel to the National Geographic's best-selling 50 States, 5,000 Ideas, you'll discover the 500 best camping destinations across the United States and Canada. You'll find 10 featured campgrounds in every state, plus tips on what to do, where to eat, and must-see attractions nearby, from national parks to local gems. And you need places to go in your RV. And you need, if you're going to follow the 70s, you need to have something in all the states.
And you need to do a little research to find out why you want to go to Nebraska.
Every state has 70s, right? So you can go to every state if you just follow the 70s.
I think so.
There have been some maps that we've seen that follow the good weather.
Go through the whole country.
I'll try to find one and stick it into on the webpage. As you know, we also travel outside the RV. We travel with a company called OAT.
Overseas Adventure Travel.
And they have been voted, 9 companies that make travel easier and better for those over 50.
And number one is OAT, but they list others as well.
Well, and we want to say that OAT has specific targeted audience. And I would say over 50 is young. And adventure, we're going to Japan with them, and we're doing mostly cultural things. We're not doing sightseeing.
No.
So they focus on cultural activities. So the other 8 of the travel companies that they mentioned here, some of them have other active types of trips in mind. But OAT focuses on active travelers over 50 looking for memorable experiences in destinations around the world. The company offers a variety of trip types, but 2 things in particular make it a particularly great for senior travelers. The first is that OAT recognizes that retired travelers tend to have the flexibility for longer trips. So many OAT adventures are 2 weeks or longer. A number of them also include pre- and post-trip extensions to make the trips even longer. And we very much appreciate that.
And
I consider 2 weeks to be fairly short.
And as we've been using them for many years, they keep adding new places for us to go, and they keep enticing us to come back, which I appreciate. Occasionally, we've had younger folks on our trips, in particular like a mother-daughter combo or something like that. And as long as you know what it's about, they seem to have a good time. And Oat offers you some time off every day where you can go and do something more active if you feel like you haven't gotten enough exercise on that day. So it's quite flexible. And then there are also tour-type travels like bike ones and
yes,
canoeing ones.
Kayaking.
Yeah, so there are lots of possibilities.
Skiing. I think that about does it for this month. We'll be going on our oat trip in about 2 weeks.
To Japan.
As long as we
make it out of the airport. Always something to worry about.
And hopefully we could buy gas to get
home.
At 150 gallons to get home.
Multiplied by... We don't even want to think about it.
It's going to be an expensive...
That's another reason to have a small rig, I guess.
Yeah, but we get 8 miles a gallon, which I think is pretty good considering that's your house.
Well, it's not very good when you're pulling up at the pump.
At the pump. Well, yeah, well, okay. Well, we just have to bite the bullet, I guess.
This is the world we live in.
RVing changes, and we try to change right along with it, and we try to give you the best advice that we possibly can, dear listener. And we hope to hear from you about your number 10... Maybe it's your number one, but adding to our list of the 10 things everybody should know about RVing.
And that you've learned along the way, traveling with an RV of your own.
Okay. So with that, we will say we'll see you in a campground near us in the next month.
And then we'll say sayonara. Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Ohayou gozaimasu. That's about it. That's all I remember.
Well, we are in the next couple of weeks. We are going to be in a campground. So
yes,
we'll be in Gulf Shores, Alabama. So if you're there.
A real beauty.
Yep.
The state park there is fabulous.
Yep. We're looking forward to it. But as we mentioned, it's very expensive.
We're not thinking about that now. We already paid for it.
Okay. That's good. With that, we will say adieu and hope to see you in a campground near us in the not-too-distant future.
Keep traveling, stay healthy, and thanks for listening.
Bye now.